Okay, I want to speak about Tu Bishvat, since it's Erev Tu Bishvat, from a little different perspective. I think a few years ago I spoke about this, but not in the last few years, and there's some new faces here, so I doubt if anybody remembers what I said a few years ago anyway. So. Okay, first I want to tell you something that I saw in a sefer. I think the B'nai Yisoskor mentions it, and other Sfarim, and that's the following. We know that there's an argument when the world was created. Rabbi Eliezer says the world was created in Tishrei, and Rabbi Yoshua says in Nisan. Now, actually, the world wasn't created either in Tishrei or in Nisan, but 6 days earlier. Whatever Tishrei and Nisan means, that Adam HaRishon was created on the first day of Tishrei or the first day of Nisan. If you subtract 6 days, you get the 25th day of Adar or the 25th day of Elul. So the actual date of the creation of the world was either the 25th of Adar or the 25th of Elul. If you subtract 40 days from the 25th day of Elul, you get the 15th day of Av. If you subtract 40 days from the 25th day of Adar, you get the 15th day of Shvat. Both of those days are significant, Tu B'Av and Tu B'Shvat. And what is the significance? Just like it says that 40 days before a person is conceived in Shomayim, they're already preparing for that person, so too, 40 days before the creation of the world, the Ribbono Shel Olam was already preparing for the creation. 40 days before. It's a time of preparation. Tu B'Av is the 40-day preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei. And Tu Bishvat is the 40-day preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan. This year it doesn't apply because we have an extra month, but in more normal years it applies. Okay, that's what I saw in a sefer. From here on in is my addition, so don't blame the sefer on it. First of all, Tosfos asks a very simple question. And he says that how could there be an argument when the world was created? Right? And how could they both be right? So Tosfos says, no, they're both right. The world was created b'machshava, in thought, on Tishrei, and l'maisa, in action, in Nisan. Now you could take that simply, that somehow God prepared the world mentally in Tishrei and actually created in Nisan, but I think it means something completely different. And that's the following. You're familiar with a Rashi in the beginning of the Torah. B'tchila ola b'machshava lehibaros b'midas hadin. Originally, the Ribbono Shel Olam intended to create the world with the midas hadin, meaning total justice, no mercy. And in the end, l'vesof shiteti mo rachamim. In the end, he added rachamim. So we normally think that that means that God changed his mind. He intended this to begin with, and then he changed his mind into something else, which is absurd. God doesn't change his mind. Therefore, the Shaloh HaKodesh says what it means is the following. The world was created on two dimensions. The ideal machshava, in other words, the theoretical ideal, is total din. In 1 second, we'll discuss why. But l'maisa, the Ribbono Shel Olam had to add rachamim. And he created the world, though it exists on both dimensions, for those who can exist with total justice, then that's the dimension they live in. And for those who need rachamim, they get mercy. But the world was created in two dimensions. Dimension of din, and then that was the machshava, meaning that was the ideal. And then there was l'maisa for practicality, God had to add rachamim. Now let me explain what that means. Why was this world created altogether? Why didn't God just create Olam Haba and create our neshamos and put them in Olam Haba? So the answer is that God wanted us to earn our Olam Haba so we'd appreciate it. What you get for free, you don't appreciate. For other reasons also, but right now that's enough to bring out the point. And therefore, ideally, the whole purpose of this world is you get what you deserve. Hopefully you earn your Olam Haba and you get it totally deserved with no help. That's the ideal. Unfortunately, many people if they didn't have any help, no mercy, they would lose everything. So better they should get something with help than get nothing. So therefore, in theory, the best thing for this world would be no help, no mercy, just you get what you deserve. So if you do a few sins, you'll get punished with no mercy. But the 99% of mitzvahs you do, you get totally rewarded for what you earned. You got no help. So it's totally your doing. You earned it with no help. That is very, very special. People who can exist on that level, that's how God deals with them. He punishes them with no mercy for the few little sins they have, but he rewards them totally because they deserve what they got. They got no help, so they deserve it completely. People who can't function like that get help. They get mercy. Okay. There were individuals in history that were able to exist totally on justice, again, which is ideally the best thing. On the one hand, you get punished severely for the few sins you do, but the majority of mitzvahs, you get total reward because you got no help, and you earned it totally on your own. Who was that? Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu davened, V'hoya Hashem li l'Elokim. I want Hashem, who's normally mercy, to be Elokim to me, only justice. I want to earn everything on exactly what I deserve, no help. No mercy. So Yaakov Avinu lived a very difficult life because of that. But in the end, his reward in Olam Haba was totally earned, which is for sure a benefit. Rabbi Akiva was somebody who was on that level. And the Shaloh HaKadosh explains the Gemara that says the following. When they were combing Rabbi Akiva's flesh with iron combs and killing him, the Romans, so the Malachim complained and said, Zu Torah v'zu Schara? Is this the reward for Torah of Rabbi Akiva? And the Rabban Shalom answered them the following, Shtok, you keep quiet. Kach also b'machshav alefonai. This is what entered my mind. So simple meaning is, it's something beyond your comprehension. This is my mind. God says my mind is much beyond your understanding, and you can't understand this. Says Lashalot, it's not what it means. Kach also b'machshav alefonai means this was my original intention in creating this world. Total justice. You get paid for everything you do without any help. What you do good is your total earnings yourself. No help, right? It's totally yours. But since there's no mercy, what you do wrong, you get punished severely for. Rabbi Akiva was able to live on that ideal world, the world of machshava, what God's first thought was. Therefore, he was punished severely for the few sins he did, but the 99% of mitzvahs were his own doing, totally earned, and therefore Chazal say, Ayin lo ros Elokim zulasecha, the Olam Haba of Rabbi Akiva, is something that not even a Navi could imagine what it was. Okay. Therefore, what Tosus means, I think, is the following. When the Rabban Shem created the world, he created it in two dimensions, like we said. The b'machshava, right, the ideal was the Midas Adin, and the Lamaisa was Midas Arachamin. But they were both created at the same time, just two dimensions. And since when the world was created, there was no time. So those two dimensions existed concurrently. When time became a factor at the beginning of creation, these two zones spread into two time zones. Rosh Hashanah of the time zone of Din became Tishrei, and the Rosh Hashanah of the time zone of Rachamim became Nisan. They split up into two time zones, but they really represent two dimensions that were created at the same exact time. The dimension of Din for those that can live in that kind of world, and the dimension of Rachamim for those who need that amendment. Now, it's interesting. Therefore, the Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei is Yom HaDin. Rosh Hashanah, that is Yom HaDin. In addition, the Svarim, the Kabbalah Svarim say that whenever we find the Aleph Beis in order, whether it's in God's name or it's in other things, when the Aleph Beis is in order, it symbolizes mercy. When the Aleph Beis is reversed, backwards, it symbolizes din. Tishrei is tough, shin, reish, is backwards, is din. Nisan, that's not the name of the month. The name of the month in the Torah is Chodesh Ha'aviv, Aleph Beis. So Nisan is Aleph Beis, Aviv, whereas Tishrei is backwards, is din. And that's why Pesach, which is the main thing in the month of Rachamim, the word Pesach, we normally translate passed over or skipped over, but there's another meaning to Pesach. The Targum says Chos, God had mercy over the houses of the Jewish people. So the word Pesach itself has a connection to mercy. So Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah of mercy, and Tishrei is the Rosh Hashanah of Din. When God created the world, they originally were at the same together, except there were two dimensions. People who could live in this dimension were given this dimension. People who would need the other dimension were given that dimension. And those two dimensions spread out into time zones where the Rosh Hashanah of the dimension of Din is Tishrei, and the Rosh Hashanah of the dimension of Rachamim is Nisan. Everybody still with me? Okay. If that's the case, then it comes out that Tu B'Av is the 40-day preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of Din, and Tu B'Shvat is the 40-day preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of Rachamim. There's another thing that they have in common. Aside from being 40-day preparations for these two Rosh Hashanahs, there's something else in common. They both have to do with trees. Tu B'Shvat, obviously, is the Rosh Hashanah of fruit-bearing trees. What does Tu B'Av have to do with trees? According to one opinion in the Gemara, the reason we celebrate Tu B'Av is because that's the day that they made the siyum on the cutting of the wood for the Mizbeach for the year. During the summer, they cut wood for the Mizbeach because the trees were dry, there was no sap, and because dry trees didn't foster worms. And wormy wood you can't use for the Mizbeach. So even though they checked the wood before they would put it on the Mizbeach, but the chances of there being worms were much less. So that's when they cut wood for the Mizbeach, during the summer season when the trees were dry. When Tu B'Av came, that was the cutoff point when the nights started to get shorter, and the nights longer and the days shorter, and the sun's rays were no longer direct. So now the sap would go into the tree. The trees weren't dry anymore from that point on, and therefore there could be worms. So they stopped cutting wood. So the siyum of cutting trees down and burning them on the Mizbeach eventually was Tu B'Av. So Tu B'Av has to do with trees too, except Tu B'Av has to do with dry, dead wood that you cut to burn on fire on the Mizbeach, and fire is a symbol of din. And Tu B'Shvat has to do with when the waters go into the tree and the sap then begins to produce the fruit from that year's rainfall. So Tu B'Shvat has to do with fruit-bearing trees and water. Water is a symbol of Rachamim. So Tu B'Shvat has to do with water and trees. Tu B'Av has to do with fire and trees. Both have to do with trees. So I have to understand, how does cutting wood and burning it on the Mizbeach prepare you for Rosh Hashanah of Din? And how does having connection with fruit and the moist, sap-laden trees prepare you for the Rosh Hashanah of Rachamim? That's what we have to discuss. So let's start with Tu B'Av and end with Tu B'Shvat. The Torah says, Ha'adam eitz hasodeh. A person is like a tree. Okay? Says the Maral Prague, why are we like trees? Because we look like a tree. Think about it. We have limbs, we have a trunk, and we have roots. Okay? So our arms and legs are like the limbs, our head is like the root, and our body is like the trunk of the tree. There's only one big difference between a tree and a person. We're upside down. You'd look more like a tree if you stood on your head. If you stand on your head and you extend your arms and legs, so you have limbs extending up, you have your root down, and your trunk in the middle. But we are an upside-down tree. Says the Maral, we're not an upside-down tree. We're just rooted in a different place. Trees are rooted in the soil, in the physical world. Human beings are rooted in the heavens. So we grow down, our root is facing where we are really rooted in spirit, the spiritual world. That's what a human being is. Except we grow down from that world. So we're not an upside down tree, we're just an upside down tree in this physical world. Because our root has to be up. But, okay, we'll get to the next part. And therefore, based on this Maharal, I want to say the following. You take the word eights, and you vocalize the letters that make up the word. Two letters, ayin and tzaddik. But you make those letters into words. Meaning, ayin can mean the eye, as a noun, but it can be a verb. Ayin means to look. Ayin, look. Tzaddik, the letter is not a tzaddik, it's a tzaddi, but it represents a tzaddik. So if you took the letters together as words, what do you get? Ayin tzaddik. Look at the tree and you'll see a tzaddik. Look at a tree, you'll see a tzaddik. Just look at the configuration of the tree, you'll understand what a tzaddik is. How so? Basically, in this maral, very simple. If you look at a tree, what do you see? The limbs, right, extend up, and they're not the main thing of the tree, because if you cut off the limbs, the tree will still live. The main thing of the tree is the root. And the root is in the ground, because that's where the tree is rooted in. If you cut off the root, there's no tree. Look at a human being now. Where's his root? Up there, up here. That means that a human being is rooted in the heavens. He's just on his limbs because he happens to be in a physical world. But the main thing is what's rooted in the spiritual world, not what's on the physical world here. So if you look at a tree and you look at a person, you'll understand what a tzaddik is. A tzaddik is a person whose root is facing up, whose root is in the spiritual world. Based on this, it would seem to follow, right, that if we would be in a spiritual world, we wouldn't be in this physical world, we'd taka be upside down, we'd be on our head. Because that's when the root would be down, the limbs would be up, just like a tree. The only reason we're inverted is because we're in a physical world, and our root has to face towards Shamayim. But if we'd be in Shamayim, then we would be on our heads. And I found a Medrash that says that. The Medrash says, in Paneach Raza, in Parshas Chayisara, says that when Rivka Imenu first saw Yitzchak Avinu, first time she was on a camel, and she fell off the camel. Something astounded her. Okay? So the Medrash says like this, what astounded her? It says that when Yitzchak was by the Akedah, so when the knife hit his throat, before the angel came and said, desist, the knife actually was on his throat. Didn't cut. But since the knife was on his throat, his neshama fled him out of fright, and he died. And the Rabban Hashem resurrected the dead, brought him back to life. But since he was dead and resurrected, he needed to be rehabilitated. So God put him into Gan Eden for 3 years. Yitzchak was 37 by the Akedah. The next thing we know about him is 40 when he gets a Shidduch. What happened in those 3 years? He was in Gan Eden. 3 years he was in Gan Eden. The moment that he exited Gan Eden, was released from the hospital, was the exact moment that Rivka saw him. He was emanating, coming out of Gan Eden. And, says the Medrash, and as is well known, the people in Gan Eden walk on their heads. And Yitzchak was still walking on his head when Rivka saw him, and therefore she was astounded, she fell off the camel. She saw her chosen the first time walking on his head. Somebody told me, knowing what it means, she fell head first off the camel to get on her head too, to be like her chosen. But you see from that Medrash clearly that in Olam HaEmes, people walk on their head. Now, if you can't walk on your head, don't get scared, because over there there's no up and down, it's only conceptual. Okay? But Lamaisa, the head, the root, is down. That's why you have hair, is the root hairs. Those are the root hairs, and in Olam HaEmes, you're down and grow like a tree with the limbs up. Except since we're in a physical world, our root has to be up because it's connected to the heavens. But if we'd be in the heavens, our root would be down. I found a few other places you see this idea. One is, there's a Gemara that says, it has many different interpretations, This is not one of the ones that I saw, but according to this, it's a very simple interpretation. The Gemara says that, I don't remember who it was, one of the Amoraim died clinically. And he went to the next world, and he came back. And they asked him what he saw. There's people like that that die clinically, and they give all of, what's it called, testimony, what they saw on their way into the next world, and then they were drawn back. So this is what happened, the Gemara speaks about it. So he said, I saw there Elyonim Lamata v'tachtonim Lamala. I saw the upper ones down and the down ones up. So simple meaning is that the people who were important over here are not important there, and the people who weren't important here are important there. It's one meaning. There was another meaning that there was a Tana, who, what's it called, or an Amora, who was the Rebbe here, and the other one was a Talmud, and there the Talmud became the Rebbe, and the Rebbe became the Talmud. But according to this, it's very simple. I saw there an Olam Hafuch, a upside down world. There, people were walking on their head, upside down. The top was on the bottom, and the bottom was on the top. Simple, very simple. Right? Because that's where they are in Olam Ha'emes. Somebody once pointed out to me, based on this, that's why children, most of them, are born head first. Because they're coming from a more spiritual world, learning with a Malach, so they come into this world upside down. Somebody just recently told me that's why the eye, the reflection, is always upside down. You really see the person upside down, and then your brain fixes it up. So that's the way the world really is. You see it the way it really is. People really should be upside down, except they're upside down only because the only reason that they're right side up is because we're in a physical world. And that's why, I think, that whenever we want to maintain a spiritual posture and show that this is really our root, even though we're standing on our legs, that's not our root. This is our root. And even though it's on the top because it's rooted in the heavens, but it doesn't look like that. So in order to make this the statement that we are really spiritual beings and this is our root and our legs are our limb, not the root, what do? When we want to maintain a spiritual posture, a root of a tree is covered. It's in the ground, in a pot. The limbs are uncovered. So we uncover our feet, take off our shoes, and cover our head. That's a spiritual posture, because that shows that this is the root, and that's only the limb. When do we do that? Yom Kippur. And Avil wants to get closer to the soul of the departed. He maintains a spiritual, posture, takes off his shoes, covers his head. Those are the times when we want to maintain a spiritual posture. We cover our head to show that that's the root, and we uncover our feet to show that that's the limb. There's an exception to that, the Gemara says. The Gemara says in Chagiga, on the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Mayofu po'amayich ba'na'olim bas nadiv. How beautiful are your footsteps in your shoes, the daughter of the benevolent one. So the Gemara explains it in the following way. How beautiful are your footsteps in your shoes when you come Aliyah L'Regel, when you come three times a year up to the Beis HaMikdash on Yontif. Bas Nadiv, the daughter of the benevolent one, Avram Avinu, who was the first Ger, first convert. What's it mean? I think it means the following. Normally, in order to show that you're a spiritual being and that your limbs are only limbs and not the root, you take off your shoes. But three times a year, you don't have to do that. Because the physical becomes spiritual. The physical world becomes spiritual. When is that? Sholosh Regalim. There's a mitzvah to eat and drink, and the eating and drinking becomes a mitzvah, becomes spiritual. So then you're beautiful even in your shoes. You don't have to take your shoes off. You can leave the shoes on, because then the physical becomes spiritual. And that is the literal translation of Aliyah L'Regel. You elevate your foot to be spiritual, not physical. And there, where do we get the power to turn physical things into spiritual? From Avram Avinu. He converted and turned a physical body of a goy into a Jew. So if he can do it, we can do it too. We can turn physical into spiritual. Okay. So therefore, if you look at a tree, the configuration, just the configuration of the tree, the dry wood, it looks like a person. Except we understand what a tzaddik is, the person is upside down because his root is in the heavens. How do you prepare for din? if you try to and if you try to imagine that you are worthy of surviving just with justice alone, then you're not going to survive. Nobody, mi yizkeh lefanecha badin, we say on Rosh Hashanah. How do you survive din? By totally giving yourself over in the hands of Hashem and saying, God, I trust you, do what you want. Then you can survive din, by giving yourself over to God. So therefore the preparation for Rosh Hashanah of din is tu ba'av, we take trees. Trees represent a tzaddik, a person. We cut them up, right? Totally negate them and subjugate them and burn them on the mizbeach, totally devote them to God. That is the way you prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of Din. Take yourself, take the tree as a representative of yourself, and put it on the mizbeach, burn it on the mizbeach. That is the preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of Din. That's Tu B'Av. How do you prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of Rachamim? Right? Here, we deal with trees, but not Eitzim, not the tree, just the wood configuration of the tree, but Ilanos. An Ilan is a fruit-bearing tree. Even though the Gemara speaks about Ilanei Srak, Ilanos that don't bear fruit, but the Gemara says that in the future, when Mashiach comes, all Ilanos Srak will bear fruit. Means they're potentially fruit-bearing trees, except in this world they don't bring out their fruit. So an Ilan is the idea of the fruit-bearing quality of the tree. Tu B'Shvat, we emphasize more the fruit-bearing quality of the tree than the configuration of the tree, which we did on Tu B'Av. Something hit me once driving. Very interesting thing about the word Ilan. Two things. Start with the first, more simple one, and then we'll get build up to the other one. The word Ilan is four letters. Aleph, Yud, Lamed, Nun. Take the Aleph and put it in your pocket. What are you left with? Yud, Lamed, Nun. How much is that in numbers? Yud is 10, Lamed is 30, is 40, and Nun is 50, is 90. Okay, 90. What letter is 90? Tzadik. Take the Aleph out of your pocket and put it back together with the Tzadik, which is the combination of Yud, Lamed, Nun. What word do you get? Eitz, with an Aleph. Not an I. Aleph Tzadik. Eitz, again, but it's an Aleph and a Tzadik. The Yud Lamed Nun becomes a Tzaddik, and the Aleph is there in the beginning. Now you have Aleph Tzaddik, which is an H, but instead with an Ayin, it's with an Aleph. We said Ayin Tzaddik means look and you'll see a Tzaddik. What does Aleph Tzaddik mean? Aleph means to learn. Right? Aleph Bina, whatever. Aleph Bina, Aleph means to learn. Aleph Tzaddik, learn about the tree, you'll see a Tzaddik. Here you look at the tree, you'll see a Tzaddik. Here, if you learn about the fruit-bearing ideas of the tree, you'll see a tzaddik. How does learning about the fruit-bearing qualities of a tree tell you what a tzaddik is? So we've spoken many times that there are two philosophies of life. What this world is all about. One philosophy, the secular philosophy, is eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. In other words, you're put in this world, you're born, eventually you're going to die, enjoy yourself in between. Immediate gratification. This is the place to enjoy what you can. Or as I saw in the t-shirt once in New York, the one who has the most toys when he dies wins. Right? Amass toys, enjoy yourself, that's what life is all about. Torah says that's not what life is all about. This world is a place to put in effort for a future benefit. The place of enjoyment is the next world. You can enjoy this world, but that's not the goal. The goal here is to create Olam Haba. And along those lines, the Meiri says that Olam Haba is the pre of Olam Hazeh. It's not a different world. It's the fruit that you prepare in this world that you reap in the next world. In this world, you plant and plow and harvest and fertilize and do all the things that will create the fruit of Olam Haba. But it's not immediate gratification. You put in work now for the future. Okay? That is brought out by the following Medrash. The Medrash says, that Avraham Avinu, 5 years before HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the mitzvah of Lech Lecha, went on a world tour to find a place that he would like to live if he's given children, where he'd want to raise his children. So he said, the Medrash says he came to Aram Naraim in Chutz Laretz, and he saw a bunch of idol worshippers eating, drinking, and partying, and he said, Rabbanu Shlomo, this is not the place for me. Came to Eretz Yisrael, and he saw a bunch of idol worshippers planting, plowing, and harvesting. He said, this is the place. Now on the surface, what in the world big difference is there between a bunch of idol worshippers eating, drinking, and partying, or a bunch of idol worshippers planting, plowing, and harvesting? They're still idol worshippers. Right? Now the idea is that he saw that Chutz La'aretz was conducive to the philosophy of eat, drink, and be merry. Immediate gratification. Enjoy it now. And that is the life of Esav. Esav was a hunter. A hunter wants to go into the forest, kill an animal, and eat it. He doesn't want to be bothered with the animal until it's ready to be eaten. And that's why his name is Esav, Osui, finished. He wants right now the finished product. Right now, enjoy yourself. Yaakov, on the other hand, Yaakov is Mahoya Ekev. What's going to be in the end? Now I'm going to put in effort for a future benefit. Yaakov was a shepherd. A shepherd is willing to put in tremendous work in the animal when he can't benefit him at all for a future benefit of what he'll get from it. Avraham Avinu saw that Chutz La'aretz is conducive, the atmosphere, the environment is conducive to eat, drink, and be merry. Whereas Eretz Yisrael, even for Goyim, even for Ovdei Avodah Zarah, but they were more involved in working now for a future benefit. Plant now, what's it called, fertilize, plow, the benefit's going to be later. So Avraham said, their benefit later is the fruit. My benefit later will be Olam Haba. But it's conducive for that. I think I once said over that this idea was very clear to me one day when they had a Shavua HaSefer here in Eretz Yisrael. So this is about 25 years ago. Shavua HaSefer used to be book week. Now it's like book month or book 3 months or whatever, and they don't bring it anymore to any place. They just give you the hanachot in the bookstores. But it used to be, they used to bring the books to a central place in each city. In Yerushalayim, it was in Gan HaPamon. And all the publishers of books, Svarim, books, would bring their latest publications, put them out on tables, or the books they couldn't get rid of and put them out on tables to try to get rid of them. And it was a night out. People would come and they get tremendous bargains on Svarim and books. They had rides for the children and cotton candy. And it was a night out with the family. People would go and walk around these tables, buy books, and Shavua HaSefer. For a week, this went on. One year, I took my family to Shavua HaSefer, and that night, that morning, I had to go to America, 1 o'clock in the morning. So we went, came back about 10 o'clock, 1 o'clock, I was already on the plane, 11 hours later, I was in New York. Get off the plane in New York, and the person who met me at the plane says to me, there's something going on in Javits Convention Center this morning, this afternoon. I have tickets. Maybe you'd like to join me. So what's going on? He said, a kosher food fest. What is that? All the producers of kosher food bring their latest products, put them out on tables and booths, and everybody walks around, tastes the food, gets to see what the new kosher lines are. I said, look, I just came from Eretz Yisrael a few hours ago, where everybody was walking around tables looking at books. Now you want me to come to Javits Convention and walk around tables, look at food? And there's nothing wrong with kosher food. Very nice. But that's your focus of living. There's something difference between focusing in on food and focusing in on books. Eretz Yisrael is conducive for the philosophy of put in effort now for the future. And Chutz La'aretz is conducive for the philosophy of eat, drink, and be merry. That doesn't mean that you can't live a beautiful Torah life in Chutz La'aretz. You can. You have to go against the grain. You can fight that environmental influence. And it doesn't mean you can't live a terrible spiritual life in Eretz Yisrael, right? And live like you're in Chutz La'aretz, but you have to go against the grain. You have to fight against that environmental. Here, the environment influences you for the right thing, but you can go against it. There, the environment influences you for the wrong thing. You can go against that too. But in any case, that is the concept of fruit. The concept of fruit is, if you learn about a tree and you learn about the concept of the fruit, you understand that it's important to put in a tremendous amount of work to be able to get that fruit in the end. It doesn't come immediately. It's not immediate gratification. And if you understand that, you understand what a tzaddik is. A tzaddik is somebody who's willing to put in work in this world for a future benefit in the next world, which is the fruit of this world. So learn about the fruit-bearing quality of the tree, and you'll see a tzaddik. Since Eretz Yisrael is a place where this hashkafa, this environmental influence, this perspective of life is strongest, so the Torah gave us mitzvahs to do with fruit that emphasizes this lesson. Since being involved with fruit is supposed to give you the idea that the main thing is not immediate gratification, but in order to get fruit, you have to put in a lot of hard work first. So the Torah gave us mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael with fruit. Not in Chutz Laaretz, but in Eretz Yisrael, to emphasize this idea. What are those mitzvahs? Basically four mitzvahs that represent four types of mitzvahs. The first is truma. Truma is one of the mitzvahs of reishis, dedicating the first to God. Similar to bikurim, the first fruits, challah, the first of the dough, truma is called reishis digoncha, the beginning of your crop. You dedicate to God first. Why? Because the first sets the pattern for everything that comes after. And if you realize that the fruit is supposed to be dedicated to God, that's what you're working towards. So you dedicate the first of your fruit to God, you understand that the idea of the fruit is to be dedicated to God. You've set the pattern. Okay. That's truma. Then you have the next kind of mitzvah. It's called maaser rishon. One-tenth of the crop goes to the Levi. You dedicate the tenth to God. Why? Because the first represents the beginning. The tenth represents the goal. Why? Because after one, every number is separate. 2, 3, 4, till 9. 10 takes all those numbers and puts them again into one unit. It unites them into one unit. In a decimal system, in the Arabic numerals, 10 is 1 10 and 0 1s. It's a unit of tens. In Hebrew, once you reach Asara, it's not a new number after that. Till Asara, Shnaim, Shalosh, Arba, Chamesh, different numbers. 10 now takes all those numbers together and you start again. Achadesre, Shtemesre. It's 1 plus 10, but the 10 remains united. So the 1 represents the beginning, the 10 represents the culmination. After you have many, many things, the goal is to unite them all again into one unity under God. So it starts with God being the ultimate one, and it ends with all the 10 things. That's why there's Aseres HaDibros, so 10 is a number of Kedusha, because it represents uniting all the many things into one unity under God. So we dedicate the first to God and the tenth. That's Truma and Maaser Rishon. Okay, now we have the right perspective. Everything has to be dedicated to God. That's the purpose. Take everything, the first, the tenth, and dedicate it to God. Okay, but now it's very nice to have a nice philosophy. How do you apply it? How do you know how to dedicate things to God? So you need to learn. So that's Maaser Sheni, second tenth. Second tenth, you don't give to the Kohen, you don't give to the Levi. You bring it to Yerushalayim and eat it there. And the Torah says, what's the purpose? L'man tilmad l'yiras Hashem Elokecha. In order that you should learn to fear God. Now how by eating fruit in Yerushalayim are you going to learn how to fear God? Says Tosfos. Because in Yerushalayim there was the Beis HaMikdash and the Kohanim and Leviim lived there. Many of them, who were actively involved in the Beis HaMikdash. The Sanhedrin, the Gedolei Yisrael, were in Yerushalayim. The Yeshivas, Kimitzion Teche Torah, most of them were in Yerushalayim. So when a person had to go and eat his Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim, he had to spend a few days there, at least, to eat it all up. And he came in contact with the Talmidei Chachamim, with the Kohanim, Leviim, Yeshivas, and he learned to fear God. So Maaser Sheni is a learning experience. Go to Yerushalayim, eat your fruit, rub shoulders with the people who you can learn from to know how to apply that philosophy of dedicating everything to God. So that's Maaser Sheni. L'man tilmad l'yiras Hashem Elokecha. And then the fourth mitzvah is Maiser Ani. You can't only worry about yourself. You have to support other people too. Right? You can't only have this goal of dedicating everything to God and learning about it for yourself. You have to help other people too, physically, spiritually, whatever. That's Maiser Ani. Give to Aniyim also. Okay. So those are the mitzvahs that have to do with the fruit of the Ilan in order to bring home this concept of fruit, which is the philosophy of not immediate gratification, putting in work for the future. If you had to pick letters in the Aleph Beis to represent these four types of mitzvahs, the first, the tenth, learn, support other people. Those are the mitzvahs. What letter would represent the first? Aleph. The tenth? Yud. Learning? Lamed. And supporting other people? Nun. Why? Because nun is means no fail, somebody who can fall, who can't be supported. That's why there's no nun in Ashrei. And David HaMelech left out the nun and immediately after said, Someich Hashem v'chol anoflim. God supports those that fall. So that's why the middle letter in Ani is a nun, because he can't be supported himself. He's falling. He can't support himself. So the letters that represent the four mitzvahs that have to do with fruit of the tree, right, which is that Aleph Tzadik, the Elon, which is Aleph Tzadik, learn about the fruit and you'll know what a Tzadik is. Those letters spell Elon. Aleph, Yud, Lamed, Nun. Those are the letters of the mitzvahs. First, tenth, learning, which is Maaser Sheni, and supporting the Omni, which is Nun, which is what's it called, Elon. The way to prepare, therefore, for the Rosh Hashanah of Rachamim, if you want Rachamim, you want mercy, you want God to give you help, that you should be dynamic, not to totally negate yourself to God, but to be dynamic and produce, you get help. So then you have to put in all the effort in the beginning, right, and understand that it's not going to come all at once. You put in effort now, you get the fruit later. So the way to prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of Rachamim is to be involved with fruit trees in their stage before the fruit comes out, when the sap is going into the tree and it's going to eventually, later on, produce that fruit. That's what you have to think about to prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan. So that's the connection between Tu B'Av and Tu B'Shvat. One is the 40-day period in preparing for the Rosh Hashanah of Din, has to do with burning trees and on the Mizbeach. And the other one has to do with preparing the 40-day preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of Rachamim, and that has to do with the fruit-bearing quality of nice, moist trees where the water is going to eventually cause the fruit to come out. Okay. We have a few minutes to do something from Parshas Yisro and Mishpatim together. It says, Vayishma Yisro. So the Rashi brings down the question the Chazal have. Mashmu Ashama Ubo. What did he hear that made him come to join the Jewish people? And the answer is Kriyas Yamsu for Milchemes Amalek. Heard about those two things. There's two problems here. First of all, the Chi Yisro Levad Shama. Vayishma Yisro. Yisro heard about Yitzias Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsu. Nobody else heard about it. The whole world heard about Shomu Amir. The whole world heard about Kriyas Yamsu. The whole world heard these things. So why does it say Vayishma Yisro? So the Medrash answers very simply. Yeah, the whole world heard, but they didn't pay attention. And Yisro heard and he paid attention. And that's why he ended up coming, and the rest of the world ignored it completely. You can hear, but if you don't pay attention, then there's a very big problem. The classic example to that is the following. It says by Cain that Cain brought his sacrifice from the inferior things. Hevel brought his from the superior things. Hevel's sacrifice was accepted and Cain's not. Cain was very upset. So God gave him the first Musar Shmuz in history. And he told him, look, imtetiv seis, don't blame your brother that you weren't accepted. You're each independent. If you will better your ways, you'll be accepted too. And if not, the Pesach Chatas Roveitz, the Yetzer Hara is waiting for you, right? It's up to you. You have free choice. You decide what to do. Right after that it says, Vayomer Kain al Hevel Achiv. Kain said something to Hevel. And then Vayi Biyosim Basar, that when they were out in the field, Kain rose up and killed Hevel. So obviously something missing here that the Torah doesn't describe. What did Kain say to Hevel that caused him to kill him in the end? So there's not a midrashim. What was going on? What were they saying? Some say they were trying to split up the world because they were going to get the Yerusha. So Kain said, look, I'll take all the real estate. You take the movable property. And then each one said to the other one, get off my land. Stop using my movable property. They started arguing. And become the argument, Kain ended up killing him. That's a midrash. Says the Ibn Ezra, what is the simple meaning of the pasuk? There has to be something you can understand from the sentence itself without any midrashim. What were they arguing about? What did Kain say to Hevel? Does Zohar even say? He says simply, Kain told Hevel what God just told him. But that's a little difficult, because if Kain just told over to Hevel what God told him, why would that cause him to kill him? The answer is, based on the following, when I was a young rabbi, quite a few years ago, my first pulpit. So many of my balabatim were older than me, and they were already accomplished lawyers, doctors, or whatever. And if I had to tell them off because of things that they needed mussar, I felt a little intimidated. So I came upon this great idea that I would put it into my Shabbos drasha, and I wouldn't, you know, make it clear who I'm talking to, but the person there would get the idea. Right, he would hear the message. Inevitably, after giving one of these fire and brimstone drashas, directed really at one person, but trying to mask that shouldn't be clear that I'm talking to one person, afterwards people came over to say good Shabbos, and I see this person coming with a big smile on his face. He comes over and says, Rabbi, you really gave it to them? I hope the person who needs that message got it. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm sure he didn't, it was you. People always say, you know, you gave it to them, somebody else. That's what Kain said. Kain said, this is great mussar, but I don't need that. There's only one other person around, Hevel. Maybe God meant him. So he told it over to Hevel. And since he didn't take it to heart, he didn't realize that God's talking to him, that's why he ended up killing Hevel. Had he taken it to heart, maybe it would have prevented that. But he heard a nice thing, but it doesn't apply to me. Tell it over to Hevel. So, therefore, people hear things, but they don't know that God's talking to them. That's why this is the preface to Matan Torah. God could talk to you face to face, but if you're not listening, right, you hear, but you're not listening, it's not going to help. So the Torah put Vayishma Yisro as a preface to the giving of the Torah to tell you how to listen. Well, if God talks, maybe realize he's talking to you. In next week's Sedra, Mishpatim, it says the Eved Ivri, who wants to stay a slave, you pierce his earlobe. Because the ear that heard on Har Sinai that you should be a slave to God, not a slave to other people, and he went and sold himself as a slave. So it always bothered me, this part of the ear doesn't hear anything. It's just a piece of cartilage. If you want to pierce the ear that heard on Har Sinai, you're supposed to be a slave and that to God and not slaves to people, you should pierce his inner ear. So I imagine God is more merciful than me, and he just wants to do it symbolically. But I think there's another idea. This part of the ear, the outer ear, the Gemara calls an afarcheses. It's a funnel. Without this part of the ear, the sound would just pass you right by. This collects the sound and directs it towards you. That's the purpose of that. He heard on Har Sinai that you're not supposed to be slaves to other people, but he didn't realize you're talking to him. This is the part of the ear that was the problem. Not he didn't hear it. He heard it. But he didn't collect that it's me. He just let it pass him by. Probably the guy behind me. The guy on the side of me. Not me. He didn't take it personally. That's the problem. So, by Yishma Yisro, Yisro heard and he listened. He took it to heart. And therefore he came. What did he hear? So it says he heard two things. Kriyas Yamsuf and Milchemes Amalek. He heard about the splitting of the Red Sea, and he heard about the war with Amalek. But the Torah says he heard everything. So why just these two things? So I think the main emphasis over here is Mashmua Shama Uba. Why did he come to join the Jewish people? He could have stayed where he was and convert and be a believer. Why do you have to come and join the Jewish people? And that, The Torah says he heard two things and he realized he can't stay where he is. He has to come to join. Why? What did he hear? He heard a Kriyas Yamsuf. The whole world heard Kriyas Yamsuf. They were afraid to touch the Jewish people. And then a few days later, Amalek came and attacked us. Why? Because it wore off. The whole world heard and they were scared of us. But it wore off very quickly for Amalek. And he realized that it could wear off for him too. The results of miracles don't last too long. Right? Wears off. So Yisro said, I can stay where I am, but it's going to wear off if I don't come and join them and constantly be strengthened. So that's Mashmua Shama Uba. And that answers another Medrash. The Medrash says that no one, from the time they left Egypt, till Yisro came, said Baruch Hashem. Yisro was the first one to say, Baruch Hashem Asher Hitzil Hashem. Now, that's hard to believe. Not one Jew, I mean, every Alta grandmother always says Baruch Hashem on everything. Baruch Hashem this, Baruch Hashem that. Right? Don't say a sentence without Baruch Hashem. Not one Jew said Baruch Hashem. After they left Egypt, only Yisro came and he said Baruch Hashem. So I want to say what it means is the following. The word Baruch means to increase. Like a brecha. Like Baruch Hashem means God, you have connected yourself to the world in such and such a way, I want that mida to increase. So the word Baruch means to increase. Beirach eslach mecho. It doesn't mean he'll bless your bread. It means he'll increase your bread. From the time they left Egypt, people said many, many ways of thanking God for what happened. But they never said the word Baruch because they didn't think there was anything to increase. We've seen it all. Right? We're not going to need to increase anything. This is it. We're set for life. Yisro, from a distance, realized that it's not going to remain. It's going to wear off. And you need to say Baruch. You need to increase it. And that's why he had to come to join the Jewish people to be constantly inspired, because otherwise it would wear off. He was the only one from afar who realized that you still need to say Baruch. You don't just have to thank and realize that you're there and that's it and you don't need anything more. So he was the first one to realize. That's why Vashmua Shabu Boy heard that it wore off on Amalek. Nobody wanted to touch the Jewish people after Kriyas Yamsuf. But a few days later, the effect wore off on Amalek. And it would take a few more years to wear off on other people. But it would wear off. So therefore, you need to constantly have it strengthened. So therefore, Yisro was the first one to recognize that and say the word Baruch, aside from all the other expressions of thank you, which the Jewish people for sure said. But they didn't feel there was any need to say Baruch to increase, because whatever they had, they thought that would never wear off. And Yisro realized that if you don't constantly strengthen it, it is going to wear off. Mm-hmm.